Non-communicable diseases, or NCDs, account for 2 of every 3 deaths among women globally. In 2018, 73% of deaths among women were due to NCDs, and a whopping 18 million of these deaths involved women of reproductive age. NCDs are no longer reserved for the elderly, and as more women between 15 and 49 years of age are diagnosed with chronic illnesses, global maternal health and mortality are increasingly affected. Examples of NCDs most threatening to maternal health are cardiovascular disease, diabetes, hypertension, thyroid disease, cancer, multiple sclerosis, chronic respiratory disease, and mental health disorders. The Wilson Center, in partnership with EMD Serono, a business of Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany, are bringing to light and investigating how NCDs directly and indirectly affect women's lives through our Code Blue series. At a recent Code Blue event, experts and clinicians discussed the current state of non-communicable diseases in the United States and around the world, how rising rates of chronic illnesses are impacting maternal mortality and morbidity, as well as personal anecdotes of diagnoses and survival. I'm Sarah Barnes, and you're listening to Friday podcasts from the Environmental Change and Security Program and the Maternal Health Initiative at the Wilson Center. Today, we'll be hearing from Terry Livingston, the head of patient outcomes and solutions and a multiple sclerosis patient advocate at EMD Serono. Livingston spoke at our recent Code Blue event as both a multiple sclerosis patient advocate and as a patient herself. In this podcast, Livingston discusses her experiences with MS, her path to diagnosis, and examples of how MS can influence pregnancy and the postpartum period.
I'm Terry Livingston, and I'm part of EMD Serono, and my topic is really going to be focused on one of the NCDs and looking at maternal health within MS. And so when I entered into MS in 2006, and when I think back about kind of at that time, there were only 4 DMTs that were available for multiple sclerosis, and now there are 17. And so if you think about from 2006 to now, that's 1 DMT that was approved every single year over the 13 and a half years. And so for me, right, to be a part of MS, like, that's amazing. And it really allows providers and patients to have option, you know, treatment options, but it also gives patients hope. Most importantly. And when I think about kind of what the other panel members have said and kind of the thread with all of the other NCDs, I really think that MS is one of those use cases that we can think about. And I say that because MS primarily affects women. You know, with the average age of diagnosis is about 33 years of age, and that's when, again, women are really thinking about having a family. It also, from new prevalence studies, the recent data suggests that there's 4 million patients with MS now worldwide, and actually 1 million in the U.S. And so it was thought of as a disease that affects Caucasian women. And just like the changing face of the U.S., MS is also changing. In fact, the incidence of MS is highest now in African-American women. And so, again, it's important that we raise awareness to these things and addresses some of what was touched upon by Lisa around addressing race, ethnicity, and disparities and social determinants of health. The other is that there's this link, and data shows that with MS, there's a link with other autoimmune disorders, most commonly hypothyroidism, and also recent data suggests with some of these inflammatory diseases that there's a link and an increased risk of MS patients also having other comorbidities such as hypertension and diabetes. So you see, again, this common thread. As a disease, MS, from a symptom standpoint, 40 to 60% of patients have either anxiety, like mood disorders that include anxiety and depression. So again, there's this common, and I think it touches upon all of the NCDs that were identified in the Code Blue series. And so I think that it's important, right, to really raise awareness around this. And so when you think about MS, and again, from a maternal health standpoint, and in particular around pregnancy, it is something that should be discussed when and brought up early to have that conversation. I think it's never too early to have that conversation about family planning. There was a recent study that was published last year that when you when it comes to pregnancy, the incidence and the prevalence of pregnancy in MS has actually risen over the, you know, from 2006 to 2014, in comparison to those without MS, where you see an actual reduction. And so some of it may be, you know, there, I think back in 2006, it wasn't talked about a lot. And so I think now that there's more data and there is a perception of again, being able to become pregnant, I think that's where the trends may, we see that there's an increase in the trends of being pregnant. So the other thing that I think is important when you're talking about pregnancy and MS is the impact of pregnancy on the disease. And so considerations need to be thought of prior to becoming pregnant, but also what happens during pregnancy and then postpartum. So what we see from the data is that MS patients will have relapses, but pregnancy is immunotolerant. And so what you do see is that it actually, because of the changes in hormones, you see a reduction in relapses in patients, again, with MS. And so, but what's important is that you need to, and people with MS need to be aware of what happens postpartum, because that's when you actually see an increase in relapses. And not only is there an increase, but there's also the severity of the relapse are worse. And for some women, this is actually how MS presents. And what I'll share with you, and I don't know if you closely looked at the bios, this is actually what happened to me. So I was diagnosed with MS back in 2006, and so I've been living with the disease for over 13 and a half years. And for me, when it presented itself shortly after the birth of my second son. And I had these symptoms, right? I had this profound fatigue that I didn't have with my first child, where I couldn't even move off the couch. And it took every effort for me to be able to breastfeed my child, my second son. But I guess he did okay, because he is now 15 and he's 6'1". I did notice that there were, I had cognitive issues where it impacted my short-term memory. My word finding became more difficult. But again, blamed it on pregnancy. You know, it also, I had burning feet. And again, what prompted me to go to the physician was I had hearing loss, ringing in my ear, and bouts of vertigo. And I was diagnosed with Meniere's disease, but despite that and being treated for it, my symptoms progressively got worse, to where I had this whole right-sided weakness, and I had difficulty in walking, and it became very visible. Went to the ER, multiple hospitalizations, multiple diagnostic tests. I'm not the typical MS patient, right? I just shared with you, most commonly it's Caucasian women. And so it was about almost two years before I actually got the diagnosis of MS. Again, I just share that with you because, again, the importance, looking back, hindsight, I had MS, before the birth of my second son. But I, again, didn't know, because these things are so subjective, that it could have been MS. When it's important, though, when you're thinking holistically, again, about a person having MS, and again, when they're thinking about family planning, right, that you want to have that conversation as early as possible. You want to be able to talk about, when is the timing right? When does it make sense? It's important that the disease, the activity, and that the disease is stable prior to having a child and planning to become pregnant. And then, of course, choice of treatment is important, because it certainly has implications. And then it's similar to any other kind of chronic disease. It would be follow the advice, right, of those other diseases as far as it relates to pregnancy. And so what, you know, when I think back and when I was diagnosed in 2006, there wasn't a lot of, you know, people didn't talk about it. It wasn't something that was on top of, you know, that commonly was spoken about amongst MS patients. In fact, what I often heard was physicians would discourage women from having a family. And actually, I've even heard some say they couldn't have a family. And so again, the data suggests otherwise. I think there is a big opportunity to provide education. Today, it's very different, and that there is a need to have more information around family planning. And so we've actually are developing a family planning resource center within my MS teams, which is a social network for MS. There's about over 138,000 MS patients that are members of this. And so we feel that this is a good way, right, to provide credible information around this important topic. The other initiatives, again, that I wanted to kind of just highlight from a more global standpoint, and this is led by our government affairs and advocacy team who are in the audience, thank you. One being, Lisa already touched upon it, healthy women, healthy economies, and it's really to focus, right, on a larger scale, more global, around policies, the identification and implementation of policies to advance women's health and being and their well-being to support their economic participation. And then the second initiative is around is called Embracing Cares, and this is a real focus on the caregiver and to be able to support and help mitigate the uncertainty felt by many MS caregivers. And I really believe that there needs to be more research conducted, especially you see the common thread. And again, if we can better understand that, it hopefully leads to better health outcomes. We need to continue to address those unanswered tough questions. And at EMD, I'm fortunate, right, to be in a position where that is my role in driving research efforts. And so I'm able to tackle kind of these topics around more of the disease state, and such as comorbidities, you know, symptom management, race, ethnicity, and healthcare disparities. I see MS as a gift. It's actually it's given me kind of this inner strength to persevere and not allow this disease to define me, with the courage to share my story and the compassion to listen to others living with MS. It has allowed me to impact people in a way that I could have never imagined. I'll just share with you a story. I had a former colleague who was diagnosed with MS. Of course, she was afraid, alone, and she needed somebody to talk to. And so I sat with her, and afterwards she sent me this beautiful email that the words will stay with me forever, and I wanted to just share it with you. She wrote, "Thank you for holding my hand through this door we call MS. I will forever be grateful for the strength and the wisdom you've given me. I know I'm not alone because I have you. You will always be a part of my MS story." So those, right, it's just being there and being able to listen and to allow that person to know that they're not alone, that has such a profound impact. And so these words, as well as other examples, have driven me, you know, driven my passion professionally to continue the research efforts to really make a difference in others living with this disease, their families, and caregivers. So thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this edition of Friday Podcasts. And thank you to Terry Livingston for her participation and commentary. If you'd like to learn more about our Code Blue series, please visit our website at www.wilsoncenter.org/maternal health or follow us on Twitter at @Wilson_MHI.